As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hey, Joe.
What?
How's this for a story? After the collapse of the Soviet Union, an intrepid researcher uncovers Soviet intelligence. This document, this dossier, says that just after World War II, something, no one knows what, was happening in the Antarctic. And the good old Department of Defense, they got spooked. So they took a big chunk of the Pacific Fleet, armed them to the teeth, and just sent them down south.
Ooh.
When they got there, it wasn't a secret Nazi base that awaited the flotilla. It was freaking aliens.
Whoa, this is according to the Russians?
That is what the KGB said.
Whoa, I like
now
it.
Now that sounds like some BS, right?
A little bit, yeah.
It is a pretty loopy story. But when you kind of dig into it, some of it actually checks out. And it kind of makes you wonder what's really out there in all that ice and snow.
Yeah, I wonder that myself, to be honest.
Featuring Joe Sweeney from Thinking Sideways Podcast and filmmaker Vincent Caldoni, this is The Shocking Details.
Hey there. Welcome to another episode of The Shocking Details. I'm Joe, joined as always by
Vincent Caldoni.
Yeah, and as you may have guessed from our little teaser lead-in there, we're going to talk about a super secret military operation in the Antarctic that happened back in the 1940s. That they still don't talk about today.
No, it's still pretty heavily classified.
It still kind of is, So, Operation High Jump is what it was called.
Yeah.
Don't know where they got that name from. I like it. But it's all right. This mission took place in the waters off of Antarctica and also on land itself and in the air above even, too. They did a lot of aerial reconnaissance as well. And even if you strip away all the UFO and conspiracy stuff, because, I mean, depending on who you read about this, there's all sorts of stuff about that's like, you know, they actually discovered the existence of the Hollow Earth and then the entrance that the aliens used to get in and out of the Hollow Earth. They found that. I mean, it goes from that to the more mundane, which is
It does. I've tried to leave out the really crazy stuff. Not unwilling to talk about the crazy stuff, but if it doesn't have any primary source documents to back it up, it's just something someone on the internet said. I did you a favor and left that one out of the episode.
It totally is. The thing about it is like Antarctica is in a sense terra incognita. There's it's a huge continent, and it's so forbidding. We've really not completely explored it.
No.
Not nearly. So there could be all sorts of hinky stuff going on down there that we don't know about. There could be aliens living there.
If you're a very skeptical, grounded person, I think you would have to say that if we somehow were able to, explore Antarctica in detail, we would find surprises down there. There would be crazy stuff we never thought of.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure. Yeah. And hopefully really cool stuff, too, like vast deposits of gold and oil. But anyway, let's get back to what happened. This was 1946. The U.S. Navy sent a naval flotilla and some highly trained troops to Antarctica, quite a large number of men that they sent down there, actually. And to supposedly the purpose of this was to set up a military base and train them for cold weather conditions. And this was all part of Operation High Jump. Mm-hmm. And this actually, when you think about it, ostensibly makes sense because at that time we were starting to move into the nuclear age, and it became a possibility of missiles, Soviet missiles coming over the North Pole and stuff, mm-hmm. and maybe even having armed confrontations, on the ice pack up there, and so this all made sense in that respect. So, but on the other hand, it makes a little too much sense.
This wasn't some small convoy of boats. Do boats convoy, or is that just trucks?
There's been a lot of previous missions and scientific and otherwise down to Antarctica prior to this, but
this is like 4,700 guys, sailors, Navy sailors and Marines, mostly sailors. I believe most of them were in the Navy.
Yeah.
And they were sent into the frigid landscape in December of all times.
December. Actually, that's a good time down there because that's summer down there.
Oh, it's the other way around.
Yeah. It's they're reversed for some reason down there. Don't ask me why, but
they need to stop. That's confusing.
I was in Tierra del Fuego about 20 years ago in December, January. And other than the wind, the weather wasn't bad at all. And that Tierra del Fuego is, by the way, not Antarctica, but it's like a stone's throw away.
Yeah, you're just across the water.
It's not far from the Weddell Peninsula, which is part of Antarctica. So, and it's definitely down in the furious 50s. There's the circumpolar winds down there that circle Antarctica. And that's what they call the Roaring 40s and the furious 50s and all that. Yeah, that's... that is real. I got to tell you, I was there in the summertime, and you know what it's like up in the Columbia Gorge in the wintertime on a stormy day.
Oh yeah.
You know what the wind is like up there? That's what the wind is like in Patagonia in the summertime. and so it's hard. That's why, that's why it was so incredibly dangerous for sailors way, way back in the day to round the Cape, So the winds down there is amazing.
It's pretty terrible.
Yeah, but let's back into this a little bit more though. So December of 1946. Again, that's not necessarily bad timing.
Not necessarily. Yeah. But as you said, there are a lot of storms down there, and apparently there were enough that the operation lasted just a few months. As weather conditions supposedly got so severe, the ships were getting damaged. Mm-hmm. One of them, we know for a fact, was damaged beyond repair. It was scrapped or whatever when it got back to Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know what they were expecting down there. Apparently, no one at Naval HQ bothered to Google Antarctica.
Well, it's one of the things that's about this is they had a flotilla of at least 13 ships. Yes, yeah. I think the actual number was more like 15, but they all the previous expeditions, I believe it just been like one ship, which is like, when you're maneuvering one ship in a really, really windy sea, windy and gusty and everything like that. That's one thing. But, when you've got all these other ships around you that you have to avoid running into, and the wind is pushing you all over the place madly, and believe me, the wind down there is going to push your ship all over the place. Maybe that was it. Maybe they were just colliding with each other. That's one of the things they didn't anticipate, was that the wind was going to make it really, really hard to maneuver their ships safely.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Yeah. And one of the things also is that they were down there ostensibly they had other mission objectives, but one of the things they want to do was establish a permanent research base. And from what I can tell, they did not even start on that.
Well, that's the amazing thing, is because that's kind of what everybody wants to do. Everybody wants a base in Antarctica.
Sure.
Because everybody wants to everybody wants to do research ostensibly, but also everybody wants to plant the flag and get a claim.
And so
why they weren't able to succeed in that one little thing is kind of beyond me. Again, I know it's hard, but still they had unlimited resources.
Basically.
Yeah. So
in 1929, the U.S. Navy actually mounted its first expedition and was currently running a base, Little America. There's Little America 1-5. Uh-huh. I just read about this. So they were able to set up research stations down there, but for some reason, this one went just absolutely the wrong way.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, book recommendation coming up. Is there an alarm for that? But if you really want to read about one of the earliest expeditions to Antarctica, read Endurance by F.A. Worsley. Have you read that book?
I like it so well. I have two copies of it for some reason.
Oh, that's awesome. No, that is an, that is an incredible book. I mean, it really is good.
It really
it's about Shackleton.
It really holds up. It's an older book, but it feel like it was written yesterday.
Oh, yeah. It's an amazing adventure. I mean, it's about Shackleton's ill-fated expedition to the South Pole. And it's a great read. But anyway, let's get back to here. So let's see. All in all, it was reported that four men were back to the 1946 expedition, by the way, not Shackleton, four men lost their lives in this expedition. Although rumors have persisted, and not just from the conspiracy types, but rumors have persisted that the number is actually much higher than that.
Hmm.
I don't know. That's a good question. I know that the four were three men got killed in a plane crash. Mm-hmm. And they never did retrieve the wreckage from that. And then one guy got crushed to death in what was called an unloading incident, quote unquote.
Okay.
Apparently crushed by, which implies he was crushed by heavy machinery. Although.
Yeah, something like that.
Although they might have been getting all euphemistic. Maybe what they were actually saying, clever guys at the Navy are, maybybe it was because the aliens unloaded both barrels of their particle beam on this poor guy. And, maybe that's what they were talking about, but that's what they claimed it was, an unloading incident. This was a highly secretive mission. So, of all the men who died in naval services here, it's difficult to know how many were involved in high jump or not.
Right.
So they could have claimed somebody was killed in a trading accident, somewhere else, and when he was actually killed down there, maybe. I don't know.
That's what some people have alleged. I don't know if there's any evidence for that, but, it does also get into the question, why was an extreme cold weather preparedness exercise so classified?
Yeah.
I mean, even if we're not talking about ETs and flying saucers, that is pretty weird. I kind of wonder if maybe they were drilling for a land invasion of the USSR?
Although... I don't know. Even the USSR is not that frozen.
But you got me, man. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Does, I mean, you think you'd maybe go to Canada and play these games instead of Antarctica, but
we're in Canada, we can go ahead and just seize the whole place too. Kidding, Canadians. Just kidding. We don't want to take your country from you. But I don't know. But yeah, typically, usually, whenever the military does something secret, they've got a cover story. So. Idea of, scouting for an ideal place for a base. Maybe that was just a cover story for something else. I mean,
I think that's actually possible. Even if some of the more outlandish theories don't wash, I do think that it probably was just a cover for something they were up to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it could have been all kinds of stuff. I mean, maybe what they were looking for was just natural resources, looking for oil or uranium or something like that.
Yeah. The Navy doesn't usually do that. And if they do it, I don't think they usually do it with, destroyers.
Well, you'd probably have to get the Navy involved, though, because you can't reach Antarctica except by sea, really. But anyway, whatever they were truly up to, and maybe there wasn't a cover story. Maybe that's really truly what they were doing, was just, exploring and, setting up, hopefully, ostensibly, a naval base or a military base.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, so here's where things start to get really goofy. Things are going to get weird from here on out, but it's fun. I'm having fun.
Yeah, we're getting back to where we got this information, which is KGB files, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So the KGB source, who near as I can tell is unnamed, I'll talk about who some people suspect he was in a little bit, but he was allegedly a high-ranking naval officer.
In the U.S. Navy, right?
In the U.S. Navy, yeah. He revealed that among the officers, they weren't even totally sure why they were being sent to Antarctica.
Mm-hmm.
There were rumors spreading among the officers that intelligence, U.S. intelligence, had uncovered a secret Nazi base in Antarctica.
I love the secret Nazi base in Antarctica. And I'm not saying, by the way, I'm not totally dumping on it. They might have had a secret Nazi base down there. I don't know.
Well, let's just get to that.
Yeah.
As nuts as it sounds, we know for a fact Hitler definitely wanted to build one of those.
Yeah.
And despite all manner of conspiracy theories that have washed around over the last half century or more, it seems, I say seems, that he just never really got around to it for one reason or the other.
Yeah. Well, and actually, if Hitler, I know, because they sent an expedition in 1939 to Antarctica, but that didn't result in a Navy base that we know of, at least. But even, again, a Nazi base in Antarctica is not necessarily as sinister as it sounds, because, again, everybody wants to plant the flag down there. So yeah, maybe that's all. Maybe he wasn't going to have a secret UFO or right, U-boat base or anything like that, but he just wanted to set up a little base and plant the flag and claim a little chunk of that for Germany. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's all it was. For
the glory of the Reich or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
Weird stuff he was into.
You know, so a Nazi base in Antarctica is not necessarily as awful as it's, you know, as you would think, but it doesn't look like they ever got around to doing it, like you say.
No,
see, going on in our KGB files here, the source, again, this is naval officers, that he tells his KGB handlers that in their time in Antarctica, the U.S. Navy was attacked by a superior force that messed up their flotilla pretty badly. So yeah, my theory about them getting shoved around by the wind and knocking into each other or whatever, running into ice floes, mm-hmm, maybe that's not what it was that messed them up.
That's what this guy told the KGB.
Yeah, because supposedly this is a fairly armed, this was an armed flotilla. I mean, obviously they weren't ready for a naval battle like Pacific, you know, Pacific in World War II, but they had Marines along. I'm sure they had guns and stuff.
They had, you know, guns. They had, these ships were armed. Everything yeah, I can track down about them, from the goofy conspiracy stuff to the more reliable stuff that's more about military history, yeah, says that they took arms with them and they had destroyer class vessels.
Yeah.
So basically the same group of people who had just spent the last, you know, 4 years or whatever messing up the Japanese got messed up by something else.
Yeah. So, yeah, so this, whatever this unknown superior force was, it was unknown flying craft attacked by attacking other unknown craft or something. I don't know, but
yeah, they were flying around taking shots at the ship is how it sounds.
Yeah. So it sounds like, you know, flying saucers or X-wing fighters from Star Wars or something. Yeah. These aren't described in a ton of detail in the files, but apparently...
No, you don't get a good picture of what they look like. And if anyone tells you they were flying saucers, that person is lying to you. They do not say that in the report.
Yeah, well, but they were something advanced and speedy and really well-armed, apparently. They forced the Navy to retreat from Antarctica.
Yeah.
So, and the KGB in their files says in there that they have verified this story with accounts from other soldiers and Marines present at these attacks.
Yeah. So the way it comes off to me is that the KGB had this one big source. He was the big get, but that they talked to enlisted men who basically backed up what this guy said.
Yeah. It wouldn't be that tough. You know, if you could, especially if you got a source in there that can tell you, give you an idea of who was there, you could track those guys down, find them in a bar off base some night, mm-hmm, you know, get them drunk and, you know, ply them with a few questions. And of course, you know, they're going to tell you some interesting tales.
Right, right. Yeah. These U.S. soldiers and sailors, along with the KGB's double agent, claim that the Navy engaged in pitched battle against these superior craft, and they were ultimately outmatched. The airships were faster than Japanese Zeros, you know, the kind that they would have been used to fighting, and it seems that the weapons, that's the Navy's weapons, seem to have basically no effect.
Hmm.
Sounds like shield technology.
Yeah, exactly.
The entire might of the U.S. Navy, or at least as it was in this little flotilla or whatever, was only able to bring down just one of these crafts.
Uh-huh.
But the fighting was so intense, the ships couldn't even recover the wreckage from the water.
Damn. It's still there, yeah, probably. Aliens probably went back and
salvaged it. They scooped that up. They're like, get out of here. You don't need that.
They got advanced tractor beam technology. So, of course,
you're just going to do something dumb with it.
Yeah.
Ultimately, the advanced technology of these crafts proved way too much for the fleet to handle, and they were forced to retreat after losing several planes. That number fluctuates how many planes they lost, but it does seem to be more than one, and taking really threatening damage to their ships, with dozens of men injured and several killed. We know that one ship made it back to Los Angeles, but it was basically totaled and ended up having to be scrapped. And that's a real fact outside of the KGB dossier. Mm-hmm. So, like, we know that happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ha, huh, interesting. So they had their, you know, some sort of like laser particle beam technology maybe or something.
I don't know. You know, they don't really describe what these aircraft were firing at them. From what I can tell, and I'm kind of giving some spoilers here, it doesn't sound like they were shooting sci-fi weapons at them.
Okay. Just projectile kinetic weapons.
It seems like they were, the way they describe them, they just call them aircraft. They compare them to Zeros. So like clearly it wasn't like, you know, like typical UFOs, whatever they were shooting at them wasn't so mind-blowing that they felt the need to go into describing them as beams of light, or however a person in 1946 would have talked about a laser or a phaser or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
But it was, they had no way to defend themselves against him, is kind of how it sounds. It sounds like it wasn't just that, you know, the Navy got as good as they could give and, you know, took a few of them out and decided to get out of there. It sounded like they were getting their butts kicked and they basically had to run.
Wow. So what the hell? Sounds like aliens to me.
It sounds weird.
Yeah. After our fleet returned to the U.S., one of the leaders of the expedition, who was Admiral Richard Byrd, famous name, you probably heard of him, a famous polar explorer. He actually did a trip over the North Pole as well, several expeditions to Antarctica. So he was an expert on naval polar logistics. He knew about that stuff. And he was, I think a renowned explorer in his own right, wouldn't you say?
He was a little bit of a media figure in his day.
He was. He was the youngest admiral at that time in the U.S. Navy, because his exploits were so incredibly, amazingly popular with the public. The Navy decided to kick him upstairs a little faster than everybody else.
Yeah.
But he started talking with the media, and that's Admiral Byrd, that the U.S. should set up defense bases in the polar regions. And that flying crafts from the area posed a serious threat to the U.S. He really did say this. I think one of the things he said is that he felt that the Earth is basically shrinking, and not literally, but in terms of in terms of people being able to get from A to B quickly, it was a much different place than it had been just a couple of decades before. Mm-hmm. Now, here's a quote from what he said to an interviewer. He said, quote, "I have to warn my compatriots that the time has ended when we were able to take refuge in our isolation and rely on the certainty that the distances, the oceans, and the poles were a guarantee of safety," unquote. Mm-hmm. In other words, he's saying, yeah, with modern jet aircraft and missile technology and all this stuff, yeah, we're not as safe as we used to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he's right.
Yeah, well, some people say that these statements were kind of controversial, got him in some hot water with the guys upstairs. Although, as you and I were talking about earlier, this is I'm not really sure, because looking at it through the prism of Washington bureaucratic politics, some people probably loved hearing these words. Because we're talking about new project and bigger budgets and all kinds of stuff, you know.
Right.
And also,
no, exactly.
Yeah. You know, and so although at the same time, I mean, he was a Navy guy, so probably this probably did raise some hackles over there with the Army. So there might have been a little infighting over that.
It didn't seem to go well for his career. He was put into some kind of early retirement and ended up in a mental institution under circumstances that I could not get good info on. Allegedly, and this is, we're getting into some shadier stuff, doctors told his sister that Admiral Byrd was fine. He wasn't crazy at all.
Yeah.
And they didn't really know why he was being kept in there.
I don't know, because he might have had some sort of a breakdown or an issue or something like that. But I know that he did participate with as a member of the Navy in Operation Deep Freeze, and that was in 1955, 56.
Yeah, I'm looking at Operation Deep Freeze right now. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, so
he did get back in there.
Yeah, so he was back in Antarctica in February 1956. Not that long. I think he was just there for about a week. But
it couldn't have been there for that long, because he passed away in 1957.
Yeah, no, I know. He died kind of young. I think he was 68 years old. He had a heart attack in his sleep, or maybe he was assassinated. But
there are people who feel that way.
Well, maybe, I don't know. But so he wasn't, you know, didn't, his controversial statements, I don't think, really ended his career.
I think it ended his career in the public, the public sphere. You don't read a lot about him giving interviews or running his mouth after that, from the little bit of research I was able to.
Yeah. No, he definitely was talking about threats coming over the poles. Frankly, even though I agree with him wholeheartedly, especially with my gift of hindsight that I have, threats coming over the North Pole, you know, he was spot on about that.
Yeah. I think he's totally right.
Yeah. Although threats coming towards the U.S. over the South Pole, that hasn't materialized yet.
That's a little further, a little more remote, but
yeah,
I think if we want to look at, from a strategic standpoint, total global preparedness, he's got a point that we can't just ignore the polar regions. They are part of the world. And
yeah,
if we, you know, if you're looking, especially in, you know, in a late 40s mindset of stopping short range ballistic missiles, not the kind of ICBMs that we're talking about. We're talking about, you know, possibly stopping ground based invasions. That's territory we have to have some presence in, just like how in the Second World War, we had to establish a whole lot more military presence in areas like the Pacific Ocean, which were pretty remote in the early 40s.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. And if somebody, like, especially back in those days, people were probably thinking that the Russians might establish military bases, big ones, in Antarctica, then, you know, that could potentially be a threat to a lot of our interests around the world, not necessarily to the continental U.S. But, you know, say you want to send an aircraft carrier from the Atlantic to the Pacific. How are you going to do that? Mm-hmm. You kind of got to go around the horn. You can't just you can't go through the Panama Canal. So you can't do that.
We've learned a lot about sending big ships through the Panama Canal lately.
And so you got to send them fairly close to Antarctica, where the Ruskies with their military bases can sink them. So, you know, so anyway, it's and Antarctica does have strategic value, I think, even today.
All right, so let's jump forward to 1958 and talk about Operation Argus.
Argus, yes, this is a fun one. Yeah,
I mean, I caught a lot. We could have done a whole thing about Argus, but it's kind of boring.
Interesting.
It's not boring to you guys like you, Joe.
But no, of course not. Yeah, but
for most folks like me, military arcana is a little bit of a snooze. But so here's the official story in a nutshell. Tell me if I get this wrong, Joe, because I bet you know more about this than I do.
Wow, no.
Military scientists hypothesized that in the event of the Soviet Union shooting missiles at the United States, we could fire low-yield, heavily radioactive missiles, basically like dirty bombs on rockets, into our own atmosphere, like above the continent, and that the cascading array of radiation and tachyon field waves, or whatever they're called, that fallout as it cascaded down would kill the electronics inside the Soviet nukes, forcing them to drop from the sky, creating a shield over the country.
I love it. Yes.
And that's what they want to do.
Yeah, this was called the Christofilos effect.
That is what it's called.
Yeah, predicted by a physicist named Nicholas Christofilos, who worked for the government. 1957, he postulated the possibility that if you touched off a few nukes in the atmosphere, like a couple hundred miles up, maybe 1,000 miles up, then electrons, all these masses of electrons from these airbursts would be trapped in the Earth's magnetic field. Just like, I mean, today, the Van Allen belts around the Earth trap a lot of particles.
Right, right.
And so the idea was that these electrons would be trapped, and it would kind of be like a slow motion EMP effect, like electromagnetic pulse. And so anything passing through these fields of electrons would be blasted with so much high voltage, it would be like an EMP, and it would toast their delicate electronics on board.
Right.
Yeah. Hypothetically, it was an interesting concept, and the government decided to check it out. And Operation Argus was unique in the sense that from the very beginning to the execution of it only took about 6 months.
That's fast.
Which was very fast, especially for the government. Typically, this should have taken at least a couple of years to plan this and carry it all out. But they did indeed. They touched off three nukes in the atmosphere down near Antarctica in 1958. This was just before one of the reasons they rushed it so much is because an atmospheric test ban was about to go into effect, and so they had to get it done quickly. But they were disappointed, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you see it. Probably fortunately.
Yeah.
It turns out the effect did happen. But it was a lot weaker than they thought it would be. The effect was not strong enough to fry Russian nukes, unfortunately.
Yeah, and you have to imagine they could also shield against that too.
That's the thing.
It's inside the nuke.
Yeah, the countermeasure for all this stuff is pretty simple and easy. You know, a little Faraday cage inside every, you know, surrounding every one of your nukes would probably be all you'd need. And so, wasn't that
so
great of an idea?
Yeah, it could have been better. Wisely, though, the U.S. didn't want to try this out over its own country.
No,
so they picked Antarctica. I guess because no one lives there.
Yeah.
It's still all kind of a weird place to do that. It's the only thing you could find somewhere else.
Actually, at least according to the official story, it wasn't right over Antarctica. It was kind of over the South Atlantic, kind of between Southern Africa and Antarctica.
That is, I did read that in on the good old Wikipedia.
Well, that's what they say, but that's what they would say, isn't it?
That is what they'd say.
Yeah, that is what they'd say. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they also had said something about wanting to test how well the nukes would work in extreme cold conditions. Because remember, this isn't just how cold it is on the ground. This is atmospheric.
Yeah.
So it's real cold up there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't really know why they picked the waters off Antarctica instead of just like the South Pacific, like Bikini Atoll, where they had been dropping them. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
It might have been just getting the whole experiment away from prying eyes, perhaps. I don't know.
Harder for the Soviets to watch.
Yeah.
I guess. Well, whatever the point was, the U.S. lit off three nukes in the airspace over Antarctica somewhere, I guess, off in the South Atlantic.
Yeah. Not too far from Antarctica. But, yeah.
Yeah. I guess it didn't really do what they wanted it to, because we don't use that method to defend our country.
No.
Of course, there is just not much good info on Operation Argus because it is still technically classified.
Yeah.
But it doesn't stop there. There is said to have been film reels of the blasts, but those are quote unquote lost and no one can see them.
Well, you know, the thing about it is, again, there's often, you know, this might have been a straight up real thing, or this could be the cover story for something else. You know, I mean, maybe what Argus was about was, there were some aliens, you know, invading, and we had to like shoot some nukes up into the atmosphere to blast their spacecraft out of the sky. Who the hell knows? I mean,
well, that's kind of we'll get there. We'll get there in a second. But this is where it also starts to get strange, is there are alleged to be people, I don't know who, with high level clearance who've actually seen these film reels claiming that they're not lost. And this has been going on for, I think, since like the 60s, and that it was not, in fact, three low yield nukes in the atmosphere off coast of Antarctica, but one extremely potent bomb, probably a hydrogen bomb, being detonated closer to the surface of Antarctica.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that sounds crazy, but I did find one thing saying that Soviet nuclear researchers hypothesized as much back in 58 based on the radiation sensors that they had around the South Atlantic.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't really buy this. Oh, we just put a few small ones way up in the atmosphere. They thought it was something much more potent and closer to the ground.
It could be. I don't know. I kind of like the idea of touching off a few hydrogen bombs over Antarctica and just seeing with this massive, massive blast of heat, you know, how much ice it could melt. We could just see what's underneath all that ice. That'd be kind of cool.
You'd be also nuking whatever's underneath there. But yeah, you'd see some cool mountains and stuff.
You might. Yeah. I mean,
and I just want to be clear, the sources that I was looking at, these are like, you know, military history websites and reporters who cover this stuff. This isn't alien conspiracy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You can find that out there too. But these are people who are much, they'd probably be annoyed at me mentioning their research in the same breath as all my UFO stuff.
Yeah.
Many savvy military historians believe the U.S. secretly and illegally dropped an H-bomb in Antarctica in 1958 and covered it up.
Yeah. I'm not sure how illegal that even would have been, but
it's a good question. I don't know. I think it would have been. I think to drop a nuke on the surface of Antarctica, well, it would have violated international treaty.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me how illegal that is or isn't.
Yeah, definitely today it would. But anyway, you know, the nice thing about it is there's nobody living there. So, nobody to call 911. But
that leaves the same question. Why nuke the middle of no place?
That's a good question. Maybe it is like what I said. They just thought they'd see like, maybe they wanted to test one particular new kind of bomb and make sure it worked. Or maybe, like I was saying, they wanted to.
Why Antarctica, not the South Pacific or something?
Well, maybe they were feeling sorry for the poor fish, you know?
Right.
That's one of the things I've always felt like, you know, with some of those things that we did is like, you know, it's like, it's in the middle of nowhere, but you know, there's a hell of a lot of fish and other critters living
birds,
in the ocean there.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah. Imagine all the whales and dolphins that were killed, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's no way that wasn't. I mean, it was. We know for a fact it had a major detriment on the ecology of the area.
But oh,
I mean,
hell
that
yeah.
would essentially be true in Antarctica.
How could it not? I mean, I'd never seen any film of it, but I would imagine there must have been millions of dead fish just, you know, floating on the surface after those things.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good question. And then you have the long term radioactive fallout, which is, I mean, I'm not like a wildlife biologist here, but I'm going to say that's probably not great for like coral and fish.
Yeah. Yeah. And Or on the other hand, you know, maybe they thrive on that crap. Who knows? But nature is funny that way.
Took care of the Soviet Union for us.
Yeah.
But what the flying saucer set thinks was going on during Operation Argus is that they were finishing off what the Navy couldn't get done in 1996.
Yeah. Yeah. That
blows my mind.
Yeah, I like it. It's So the aliens were down there, and we were sending secret emissaries to them, saying, "Hey, you know, look, you know, this is our planet. We'd kind of prefer that you leave." And the aliens were going like, "Ha ha, neener neener," you know. And so,
yeah, remember how it happened last time you tried to buck up on us?
Yeah. What? Yeah. And so, exactly. And so they didn't realize perhaps that we were developing hydrogen bombs. And so maybe that's what happened. I don't know.
Yeah. And we just finally, whatever like alien base they had on the South Pole, they just took it straight to it with the biggest H-bomb they could get down there and took care of that.
Yeah. They're toast now.
That is.
Yeah. I like it.
Mind blowing. Well, Joe, I got to tell you, my mind is too blown right now. I can't, it's all in pieces all around me.
Yeah. I think that the only thing that's going to be is that's going to bring us back and center us again is like some refreshing and heartening words from our sponsors.
Yeah. That's a great idea. I love that idea.
Yeah. That'll get us back on track here. All right. So we're going to be right back.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we're back. All right, ready to talk theories. At least I am. Are you, Vincent?
I'm ready. I'm feeling much better.
Okay, yeah, me too. Caught my breath there. There's not that many. They're fun, of course, and interesting. Let's see. You have a particular favorite?
I'm just going to start at the top.
Yeah.
Let's go from the skeptical angle to begin. That's kind of what I like.
Yeah.
It's the most skeptical of theories. But you know, normally I kind of push back on, you know, the kind of like the boring skeptical theories. I actually kind of am open to this one.
Yeah.
And that's just the theory that Antarctica is a much more messed up place than they were thinking.
Yeah, it is. It's tough. It's a harsh environment. I mean,
So Operation High Jump was meant to see how the U.S. Navy would fare in extreme cold conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And you can imagine that the admirals were sitting around thinking that these battle-hardened ships could take on anything, anywhere on planet Earth, whatever the atmosphere had to offer. But the waters of Antarctica are brutal in the good seasons. You know, it's a whole other story. So even modern vessels, I mean, they can't just go there willy-nilly today. They have to be built for it.
Yeah, you know, this is something where I could see where they planned all sorts of things, all the logistics surrounding, say, transporting men and equipment and machinery and material there to get it all set up. And they overlook some really, really small little things like, say, like, you know, how are the rubber seals and gaskets on our engines going to perform under really, really, really cold conditions? Things like that, that just, you know, the extreme conditions just caused their machinery to start, you know,
So one source I was looking at was talking about how not so much that like the engines were failing, but that they had too much stuff on the outside of the boat.
Yeah.
And it was subject to freezing and ice buildup and just sort of falling apart. You know, like radar and stuff, you know, navigation equipment was locking up on them and causing real big issues.
Yeah, no, that's entirely plausible. You know, we're actually just right now on the anniversary of the loss of the Thresher, which was one of our earlier nuclear boats, nuclear submarines here in the U.S. And that was a similar thing. It was like this was the most sophisticated submarine that the U.S. had yet built, nuclear powered and ultra modern and everything, and it wound up sinking unaccountably on a shakedown cruise. And the prevalent theory about it, nobody really knows 100% for sure why it sank, because when they found it, it had imploded and then exploded, and there weren't too many large pieces of it left laying around. But the prevalent theory is that when they built this new submarine that was built to dive far, far deeper than any submarine that the U.S. Navy had built before, they essentially based like the ballast system and everything off the old fleet boat system. And the fleet boats had a test dive limit of 400 feet. And they didn't really redesign it or upgrade it for these new harsher conditions that this boat was supposed to function in.
That's ridiculous.
It is. Well, yeah, they
I would have thought of that. I'm not an engineer.
I know, right? So they upgraded all this stuff, like the propulsion system is, you know, the latest and greatest nuclear power. And yeah, but they just, you know, didn't really upgrade some of the other stuff. And whoopsie, they should have thought of that.
Yeah.
So a little design snafu there. Of course, there was a major expensive program to remedy that situation called Subsafe. But yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing that can happen. I mean, what worked perfectly well before, they just said, well, why is it not going to continue to work well now? Why not? Right,
we're having a great time in the South Pacific. Why wouldn't it work in Antarctica?
Yeah. And so, it probably is at least a big part of this is just that they didn't account for the conditions being so much harsher.
And it does make sense that if they send this giant flotilla and 5,000 men down there and they get their butts kicked by bad weather, that they'd want to cover that up. That would not be something they'd want to publicize.
Yeah.
So they put the lid on it with the full force of the bureaucratic weight of the United States government.
And then you think they maybe fed a little BS to the KGB.
See, that's what I think. You go, oh, wait, but what about this KGB report? That's pretty legit, right? But like, you know, it's a really great thing to do during a Cold War.
Yeah.
Feed your enemies a bunch of BS intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So maybe the Soviet's double agent was actually a triple agent and the CIA or somebody like that had him feeding the Ruskies a bunch of just total nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it, that's actually pretty brilliant because it accomplishes two goals. It saves face, right? You wouldn't want the Soviet Union learning that your Navy was pretty much taken out by the wind.
Yeah, bad weather.
It gets them spinning their wheels, running around hunting for flying saucers and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's an absolute military or strategic advantage to have them wasting their time on snipe hunts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The thing about it is, though, is that like the CIA has never been good at fooling the Soviets or the Russians. The Russians are a lot better at that stuff. Usually it was the other way around. They had the CIA and the FBI chasing their tails more times than I can imagine.
Yeah, that's true.
And
don't know, Joe. We don't know that the actual military intelligence for the Soviet Union was fooled by this. There was one KGB agent who put together this little dossier or whatever.
Absolutely,
He seemed pretty convinced, but they may have read this and been like, "Vasily, you're an idiot."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. That's entirely possible that he took the report and submitted it with some trepidation, and they all agreed that their source is just off his rocker and stopped using him. So that could have been that too, but he still had to report back what the source said.
He had to prove he did something while he was out there getting that info.
Yeah, exactly. So, so that's possible. It was disinformation. I mean,
and so we just to double back because we promised we would, some people think that this unknown source was actually Byrd himself.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have evidence for that, but that is what some people think.
That would be a high level source now, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Well, it's said to be an officer. He would have been an officer. I mean, admirable.
He would have been. That no wonder he died in his sleep of a heart attack at the young age of 68.
Yeah. Testing for polonium 210.
Yeah, I know. Seriously.
There's just one thing.
Yeah.
And when I looked into this, that really stops me from just fully embracing this theory, which is, you know, we did exercises. The United States did all kinds of exercises like this after the Second World War to test preparedness around the world. We didn't tend to send this many boats and like 5,000 men. Something about it, and I'm not the only one who's commented on this, says people think there was something weird about Operation High Jump, that it felt like a real war and not just an exercise. The speed with which they put it together, the amount of firepower they brought with them, the number of men, it would have been really expensive. The cost would have been immense.
Yeah.
Other defense exercises happened. They just weren't on any. I couldn't find anything really on this scale. Do you know more about it? Can you think of one on this scale?
I can't off the top of my head, but it's not entirely. I mean, a military exercise of this many people is not. I can't think of one off the top of my head that I can name, but it's not that unusual. And again, at this point in time, we're starting to think about maybe doing battle with the Russians up at the North Pole, the polar ice caps up there. I know that one of the things that they were practicing was creating, they brought in some special machinery to create airstrips on the ice down there. And that's when the guy that, who again, I don't know his name, who was killed in the unloading incident. Apparently, he was crushed to death by this machinery that they brought in to make airstrips. And I don't know what this stuff, if it was just like a massive steamroller kind of thing.
Yeah.
Maybe it was some sort of massive, like, heated steamroller, you know, it would, like, sort of crush the ice down and then blast it with flame and then roll over it again and make a nice.
That's kind of what I'm picturing, is just like a giant planer.
Yeah. You apparently know, this poor,
on wood.
Yeah. Apparently this poor guy got like run over by that machine or something. Yeah.
Ooh, geez. I've heard that.
Yeah. That sucks. But, and so maybe that was the whole plan, was this, it was just an exercise to practice going into this incredibly hostile environment, setting up a temporary military base with airstrips and everything. And then, you know, maybe that's what they were practicing. And so it's not beyond the realm of possibility that this was a legitimate, but non-war. But at the same time, it could be they went down there to actually wage war as well.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I guess what I can say is that the crack you can go through in this one, you can be really skeptical and really like, what, they were down there shooting down flying saucers off the coast of Antarctica? That's ridiculous. I think there is still some mystery around what the heck they were doing down there and why they were doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The one thing I would say that makes me, but again, maybe they're lying to us. I've seen the list of the aircraft that they took with them down there. Mm-hmm. There weren't that many, but again, they could be lying. No. And they all seem to be sort of like just reconnaissance oriented rather than fighting planes. I mean, they had some flying boats and they had helicopters and stuff like that. They didn't take any fighter jets that I know of down there with them.
Well, I don't know how many fighter jets they had in 1946, but I take your point. Yeah, they did not seem prepared to do air battle.
Yeah. I shouldn't say fighter jets, but, you know, fighter planes. They had,
they had
Boku
or whatever.
Yeah, they had Boku fighting planes. You know, like
that's true.
They had scads of them. I mean, they were actually scrapping them with just mad abandon at post World War II and everything.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe that's what this was all about. Is they took all this material down there to just store it in Antarctica? Because, you know, Antarctica is, if you don't know this, is the driest place on Earth.
That's true.
It is. So you want to store, you know, mothball a bunch of stuff, just park it in Antarctica and it'll be just fine, except for all that snow and ice on top of it when you go back to get it back.
But, I don't think Antarctica is known as a great storage facility.
It's got its advantages and its disadvantages. Number one is that break-ins and theft are pretty much unknown, you know?
right.
Yeah. Well, so we got another theory here.
Nazis.
Yeah, the Nazis. So, in 2016, Russian explorers discovered a real-life Nazi base in Antarctica, right?
Well,
not really. No, it's just a bunker.
It was really just kind of a little bunker. I don't think it was used for all that much, but it does show that Hitler and the Nazis did have a presence on the continent.
Yeah, I don't know.
Prior to this time, I believe, was just a rumor.
Yeah, well, I don't know that this was a part of a permanent base or just a temporary structure that they erected as part of their 1939 expedition to the continent.
I can't remember when they built it. I did actually look that up, but it's pretty small. I don't think it was supposed to be the start of something really permanent.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, in and of itself, it's just kind of a ruin.
Yeah, they probably.
But it's not like it's a tar paper shack with a swastika on the side. It was a real building.
Yeah, not that either. It's kind of cool, actually. Too bad they didn't leave a couple of crates full of highly collectible Lugers and Schmeissers in there. That would be really nice.
Yeah. I don't know.
But the Nazi base, naval officers widely believed the mission was a cover to root out the last of the Third Reich.
Mm-hmm.
So that's,
was a rumor among the officer corps.
We've all heard these stories about the bunch of Nazis fled to Antarctica post-World War II.
Mm-hmm.
It's
maybe where it comes from.
Yeah. Yeah, the reports, and as far as, you know, the official reports, don't talk about anything very science-y, fiction-y.
About
Operation High Jump. But they do talk about extremely fast, well-armored aircraft that posed a real challenge to our military. And granted, probably High Jump was not the best armed flotilla. They weren't really there for battle. Unless they were there to... they're in the Navy. They're always going to be armed with, you know, armed teeth.
Right.
So they had actually a Nazi base down there, and the Nazis, of course, they developed jet aircraft before any of the rest of us did.
They did by quite a bit.
Yeah. They had some very advanced stuff in terms of aircraft, rockets, submarines. I mean, they were beating the pants off of us in a lot of areas, technologically speaking.
Yeah.
But
so here's a fun fact for you.
Yeah.
Chuck Yeager was only the first person to break the sound barrier and live. live is the operative sentence. At least one and probably more Nazi pilots died after taking various rocket planes well past the sound barrier, but then they would come crashing down into a billion little pieces. Mm-hmm. Like they couldn't even find
bones. Yeah, I know that. Apparently there are challenges in flying that fast in terms of, you know, control and everything like that.
They were good at getting them off the ground, but, you know, basically it was a V2 with a, you know, with a cockpit.
Yeah, with a cockpit and some tiny wings. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the whole thing is like the tendon. I would imagine that if you're flying in a plane going 300-400 miles an hour and you make a correction with your flaps or your rudder or whatever, it's like, okay, whatever, you know, and then you know, make a similar correction at, you know, at supersonic speeds, it's probably going to be a lot more radical in its effect.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's when you see jet planes up in the air, a lot of times what they're doing is they're drilling to learn how to bank correctly so that they don't rip themselves apart with their own crosswind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or just, or just put on a little too much G-force there.
Yep.
Yeah, it's funny when you see those see some of those supersonic planes that the U.S. has and everything. They look so space agey and everything, but those things are built like freaking tanks. They kind of have to be because of the forces that those things undergo.
No, totally.
And so that's another possibility too, is that they just didn't build their craft heavily enough to withstand the forces that they were subjecting them to.
There were so many problems. If you read about it, it didn't go very well. But maybe right at the end of the war, they got some of them right.
Yeah. So it's entirely plausible.
Could Operation High Junk just have just accidentally stumbled upon a highly armored Third Reich holdout base?
Yeah.
I mean, my only problem with it, honestly, I'm willing to just entertain this kind of wild speculation up to the point that we haven't found that base.
Yeah. Not yet.
Wherever they put this thing, they must have hit it.
Yeah.
Because no one's seen it in the last 70 years or whatever.
Well, you know, it wouldn't be that hard to hide it, though, because nature would tend to hide it for you down there. I mean, it's going to be just blanketed with snow and ice and more snow and more ice and more snow and more ice. And so could be it. Maybe there was a base down there and it's just, you know, it just got naturally covered up.
Yep.
You know?
Or maybe it got wiped off the face of the planet by Operation
bomb?
Argus.
Yeah, it could be. That could be it. That could be it, too.
I don't know. That's really my only major beef with it. I do think there's like maybe just this kind of tiny shred of credibility when, you know, there's so much UFO lore around Operation High Jump.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, when you kind of dig into it, no one's like, oh, these were like space, you know, like they don't describe them like spaceships. They describe them like
extremely capable aircraft. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. That sounds more like the Nazis to me. And we know Hitler had a weird thing about Antarctica, which is why these theories about the last Nazi holdouts in Antarctica is, you know, still going 70, 80 years later.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd have to see more than just a little bunker.
I think, personally, you know, if I were in charge, I would send a small contingent of people down there with a white flag to talk to the Nazis. And just explain, look, you know, you guys are probably sick of being here, sick of the weather. And so we're going to give you amnesty, but in return, you got to let us look at all your cool toys. Okay. And that's what that's probably what we would have done. I mean, like, for example, after World War II, we brought a ton of Nazi scientists over to America to help us build our rockets and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I
mean, who knows what those guys would have cooked up in the last 70, 80 years.
Yeah.
It'd probably be weird, though, like living in isolation in Antarctica.
Yeah, actually.
Probably some strange people.
Yeah.
I mean, the Nazis were strange anyway. Vril, like when you read it, like these guys were wacky.
Yeah, a lot of them were. I mean, not everybody who joined the party was as whacked out as everybody else. It's, you know, people varied quite a lot, but some of them were pretty whacked out. They believed a lot of really new agey stuff, the Nazis did.
They did a lot of meth.
Yeah, they did, actually. they did do a lot of meth.
No, I'm not joking. That's really true.
No, it's true. I mean, they actually gave that to their pilots to enhance their awareness and their alertness on long flights and stuff like that. And so that's where meth originated, I believe, was back around World War II time. Yeah.
And, all right, so let's move on from methed out Nazis over
methed
Antarctica.
Methed out Nazis, yeah. I'm kind of skeptical about the Nazi thing.
I am too, but I think theory three is the right one.
Yeah, because again, back to the last thing about the Nazis, I think after a little bit of time in Antarctica, they would have come out of there probably themselves waving the white flag at us and saying, "Hey, look,
we're so bored.
We've got some cool toys. If you promise not to execute us, then we'll let you look at our cool toys." But
we're running out of canned spit.
Oh yeah. Well, let's go on to our third theory, which is a good one.
It's the correct one.
It is, obviously.
It was aliens.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That's it. That's the one. That's okay. Right. Get over it. It's true. Aliens did it.
Okay. Debate's over. Wow. Let's see. Time to run the credits. Well, let's see. Right. Well, maybe not.
I don't know. I'm actually going to go with the probably not. If nothing else, I was really surprised when I read this, expecting to get some fun UFO lore out of it. Just, no one really talks about ETs.
Yeah.
And none of these things sound particularly more alien than they just don't describe it that way. I know I've talked about this a lot.
Yeah.
This is nothing from first, you know, the text, whether it's the KGB or anyone else, sound very science fiction-y. It's frustrating that they don't go into more depth about what they saw, but to me that points out that they were more ordinary, right? Mm-hmm. They're not talking about flying saucers or lasers. So I also have no idea why, if the US discovered hostile aliens living in Antarctica in 1946, why they'd wait a full 12 years to do something about it.
Maybe it took them that long to put together a nice hydrogen bomb. I don't know. I don't remember when the first hydrogen bomb was created. Yeah, that is a long time.
I just feel like if I were the president and like Admiral Byrd comes back and he's like, yeah, there were straight up aliens with super weapons down there. We need to do something. I'd be like, okay, let's do this today, not in 12 years.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing about it is like, you know, if I were aliens, maybe I would find Antarctica to be a really cool place to hang out because, I mean, maybe these are aliens from the ice planet of Hoth. You recall that from Star Wars. So maybe to them, to, you know, this was like, you know, the best place on Earth to be. And they've been living down there for God knows how long.
Yeah.
And then suddenly humans start intruding and we sort of had, maybe we had a sort of an accommodation with them after 1946, and for some reason that accommodation broke down.
Yeah.
So
yeah, like, maybe. Yeah, maybe we tried to negotiate, and they weren't working with us.
Yeah, but yeah, and it's also possible that aliens have been living in Antarctica for millions of years. I mean,
yeah,
maybe they've been on this planet like forever. I mean, because you got to remember, the aliens are not on the same timeline as us. I mean.
No, why would they be?
No, they're not. I mean, they could literally have been way more advanced than us a million years ago, 2, 3, 4 million years ago. They've been on the planet this entire time. Who knows? Who the hell knows? I mean, And then suddenly these friggin' talking monkeys start getting smart and, you know, making tools.
Show up with a battleship.
You can look at it, it's kind of like, from the aliens' point of view, they might not have unlimited resources. It's like, look at them, like, say, a small group of, say, Europeans in a hostile African country back in say, the 18th or 19th century. And the Europeans have much superior technology. Like, they've got muzzle-loading muskets, you know? Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. There's only a few dozen of them. And there's, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of natives armed with spears and bows and arrows and God knows what. How do you think they're going to fare? Well, and probably for the aliens, it's a similar thing. They've got much superior technology, but it's not like they have unlimited quantities of it.
That's funny. That's almost how I pictured it. I kind of pictured like that Operation High Jump. They come down there and they're like, okay, get these guys off our lawn. You know, they could have just taken out the flotilla in seconds, but they didn't want to do that. So they chase them with some of the, you know, little ships they have.
Uh-huh.
And then we come back 12 years later, drop a big old hydrogen bomb on their head. They're of course fine. Their force shields protect them. They're like, okay, this is getting out of hand, guys. We gotta go.
Yeah.
This trouble. It's too much drama with these weird apes.
Yeah, it could have been that, or it could have been once again, it could have been, you know, they have a white flag, a little parlay, and they work out a treaty whereby the aliens continue to live in Antarctica and we leave them alone. Yeah. You know? And and maybe they're still down there. I don't know.
So in conclusion, I don't know what happened. I don't really even fully love any of these theories except for I just like aliens. So
I want
that one to be true. So I'm going to go with that one, but it's probably more like number one. But even then there's a lot of questions. So I don't know. You could sure let us know what you think happened during Operation High Jump.
Absolutely.
You can tell us about the Hollow Earth and all the stuff that I kind of skipped because it's weird.
Yeah. No, I mean,
Joe, what do you think happened?
I really don't know. I'm liking the aliens too. In fact, I think there's probably at least one alien in Antarctica right now listening to the podcast. So, you know, we'd like to hear from you.
I really appreciate it. We need all the listeners we can get. Thank you, Alien.
No, absolutely.
And we don't care if you're green or have huge eyes or whatever. You're welcome at our pool party any day.
Absolutely. And especially as long as you patronize our sponsors, Mr. Alien, we would really appreciate that. And you,
yeah, if you could write us a review,
write us a review in your language, that'd be great. Yeah. And definitely, you know, even aliens need tampons, you know, so yeah, buy our sponsors' products. Okay. Yeah,
buy their stuff.
Absolutely.
These are affiliate links.
Yeah. I really don't. I think most likely they just went down there. Theory number one, Antarctica just thrashed them a little more soundly than they thought it would.
I think that one's likely. I still have some questions, but yeah.
Yeah. And it might be too that they actually went down there and accomplished most, if not all, of the mission and took a little more damage than they thought they would. But nonetheless, mm-hmm. you know, they pretty much executed the mission and it all came out okay. I don't know.
Well, I don't think it came out that good. They lost a whole ship and a few guys. And they never really built the base they said they were going to build. So
yeah,
I don't know. Yeah. That's a good question. I don't really know. Yeah. I got nothing.
Yeah.
So I think we can wrap this one up.
I think we probably should. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I guess that's about it. Stay tuned to hear the lovely test tell you how to find us via email and of course, social media. And also, of course, the usual plea for a rating and a review, a good rating and a good review.
It helps so much. Yeah. It sounds crazy, but like it really does help us get the word out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so that's about it until next week. What do they say in Antarctica when they say goodbye?
Well, there's no language of Antarctica.
Ta-ta.
Ta-ta for now.
Toodaloo. Yeah. All right. Bye.
The shocking details can be found at www.theshockingdetails.com. We're on Twitter at Shocking Details. For discussion of episodes and more, our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/shockingdetailspodcast/. Or you can email us at theshockingdetailspodcast@gmail.com. And if you like the podcast, please consider giving us a like and a positive review and letting people know about us.
No one really talks about U2. No one really talks about ETs.
They cat meowed at me.
I heard.
Hey, buddy. Hey.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.